I teach American literature in high school. And I can tell you now, we're in a series of books that have been offered to us by our district that are called YA books, youth, toward youth, youth authors, they call them, that we have. We're reading Lit Circles. Amongst that series of books, they have us reading right now, or have us presenting to our class to read right now. One of them glorifies gang violence. Another one glorifies homosexuality. Another one normalizes questioning genders, transgenderism, and things along those lines. And that's what's in public schools. It has gotten to where I look forward to teaching The Great Gatsby every year, because that's gotten to where that seems normal, even though it's nothing but about alcoholism and fornication and everything else. But that's what seems that's normal anymore. I'm still one of those teachers that send home a list of the books with a description of everything that's in the books, ask the parents to sign something to send back to me that it's okay, even though I have juniors in high school, for them to read it. But none of the rest of our teachers do on my level, because they... Our kids are juniors in high school. They're adults. They can choose what they want to read, is the thought process. So with that in mind, just a warning to parents here, that's what's happening in public school classrooms right now. Now, that being said, I guess my questions would be, number one, is there going to come a point where we must encourage our parents to educate children at home rather than send them to public schools? Is there going to come a point where people like me have to be encouraged to get out of public schools and out of public school teaching because of the things that are read in my classroom and done? Or can we, continue to be a good influence at some point? And then number three, I want to take this back to something Clint was talking about last night. When Clint was talking about when they ate at those feasts, they were partaking in communion with those idols. When we involve ourselves with things like this, are we in some way communing with the world in a way that we shouldn't be? The last comment I want to make is, I've said this before in a sermon that I have at home too. On Tuesday night at 8 o'clock in the Elliott household, when I was growing up, the TV went off because you kids are not watching that Happy Days, you know? And man, I wish I could find anything like that the kids could watch these days.
Well, you've posed a lot of questions there. As far as, is there going to come a time when Christians are going to have to think about whether or not to send their kids to school? I knew this question would probably come up relative to homeschool, just based on what I said. As all of you know, or most of you know, I have no children, so I can't speak from experience here. I can tell you this, knowing what I know today, if I were a parent, I would homeschool. Now, I know not everyone can do that, and may not have the resources, but I would make it my effort to do that if I could now. Now, I don't believe that a person is sinning by sending their kids to public schools. But as Brother Elliott pointed out, it looks to me like the longer time goes on, the more difficult that's going to be. And things I keep hearing, I'm not persuaded that it's all that long. I heard a radio broadcast a few days ago about out in Colorado, the broadcast may have been 2 or 3 years old, but out in Colorado, and somebody here may know about this, and there may be something more recent that I don't know about, but they were trying to pass a law, I think they did pass it, if I'm not mistaken, where they were going to require the gay agenda literature and classes or whatever the format was on any school, Christian school, or any other sort of charter school or any kind of school that received any public monies. And that may already be going on, I don't know. But I don't know. I know when I was a kid, my mother told me, you don't have to believe in evolution. They may teach it, but you don't have to believe it. And at the time, that seemed to work. On this, I'm not sure. I don't know. That's a tough question. As far as the fellowship issue, that's also a tough question, because I liken it to having your food, which is otherwise good and wholesome food, served to you in a tub of sewage. You reach in to get your food, it may be good food inherently, but I don't know how you can sometimes separate the food from the container in which it's delivered. And that just seems to be the case more and more, and more extensively, and the pushing of the limit on and on as time goes on. I don't mean to preach another sermon, but those are great questions. I hope I answered them.
Clint DeFrance, and then Matt Kuderna.
That was excellent. I really appreciate it. When I hear a presentation like this, or sometimes I've even tried to preach something like this, and in the moment, I feel very convicted about lifestyle changes that need to come to me regarding the entertainment that I pursue. And sometimes it happens, a reform. Usually it's temporary. And within a short time, I find that I've gone back to exercising very little discrimination. I read, and this was a few years ago, I'm not sure what it would be now, but a few years ago, I read an article that said, if you watch television like a normal American, in 20 years, you will see over 145,000 sex scenes, either graphically demonstrated or implied, between unmarried people. And those sex scenes will be depicted either romantically or comedically. And that was very disturbing to me, because I practice selective righteous indignation. I know that I have, and I know that's not right. And so when I read something like that, it really jolts me a great deal. So I've got a two-part question, or maybe it's two questions. Since things are the way they are, I made the resolution to no longer watch any television show that included a sexual relationship between unmarried people. And it's extremely difficult to find one. That's the truth. Other than maybe Andy Griffith or something like that, a Leave It to Beaver. Anything made in the modern world, and all my brothers and sisters are encouraging me to watch shows, and I do, and we talk about, and they're full of this stuff. And then I hear a sermon like this, and it's very convicting to me. So can you comment on the rightness or wrongness of ingesting programming that contains sinful behavior in the storyline? And then I have this question. If the material presents it in a negative light, or amorally, where the consumer can draw his or her own conclusion about whether it's good or evil, does that affect whether the material is acceptable? Sometimes I have heard Christians say, the Bible's full of sexual promiscuity and violence, so why can't I watch it on TV? So, you know, maybe you, I hope I communicated that clearly enough that you can tell me something about.
No, that's actually an excellent question. On the first part of your comments, relative to your conviction, I have to confess I'm with you there myself. Listen, as I mentioned, I'm a kid of the 70s. I was a child in the 60s, and I was a teenager in the 70s, and my family was not in the church, and you can fill in the blanks. And I can tell you that everything that was out there, I knew about. And when I became a member of the church, I made some big changes. But as I look back in that 35 years since I became a member of the church, there were a lot of times when things could have been very different and better than they were. Part of it was just youth and the lack of wisdom. And sometimes that's just what we have to do sometimes. We just have to live long enough to figure some things out. And some of you are smarter than I am. You figured it out a lot younger than I did. But that doesn't mean, that doesn't make it right. And I agree, I'm with you. When I, certain points as I was putting this sermon together, I'm thinking in my mind, well, you know, really, that's convicting to me on this or that other thing. And that's true. And it's because we are just bombarded, like you say, people from the church. Did you watch so-and-so? Did you see us and such? And you think, well, you know, they watched it. And I think sometimes people are, you know, we need to be careful. Sometimes our brothers and sisters are not really that discerning about that kind of thing. And like you say, talk about it and later on. Now, regarding your second point, that's an excellent point. And there's an author. In fact, I have, I can show you his book. In fact, I tried to put these in here so you can see them. I'll see if I can click to it very quickly here. But this book right here, The Tattooed Jesus. Don't let the title jolt you. This man is on, as far as pop culture is concerned, he's stricter than most people in this room. And he's not an anti-electronics type person. But he's very good on some of these issues. And he discusses that very question, Clint, that you're talking about as to whether or not if violence is presented in a good light, or the story or the moral or the outcome of the movie or the television or whatever is a good or godly thing, is it okay then? And he discusses that in the book. And basically, as I can take him, and he himself seems to be still thinking these things out to some extent, in his response, and I'll defer to him, that basically, yes, as long as if a movie is presenting a positive thing, then that is a very different outcome than if it is some kind of godless message sent over. Now, that's a very generic statement, I realize, and may not be satisfactory, but I'm not sure I'm 100% in agreement with that. I don't know. I welcome anything anybody has to say about that, frankly. I feel like I'm just talking in circles here. But I did like some of this man's comments, and if you're interested, you should pick up that book. I think I found that one for $2, used copy.
All right, we have a few more questioners, and we're running close on being out of time, so we'll hurry on to Matt Kluderna and then Randy Tidmore.
Well, brother, my question is relatively short. You mentioned in your Bible verses there at the end, Ephesians 5:15-16, see then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. We've had a lot of discussion about how to discern what entertainment we should or should not consume, but it seems to me the way that you presented this verse in this context would be that entertainment as a whole is a waste of time in the broader scope of saving souls and living a righteous life. So should our standard be perhaps even higher than discerning our entertainment? Should it be rejecting it as a whole and pursuing other righteous things?
That's a great question. I quoted the verse because of that one section, redeeming the time, and my point was, and I didn't have time to explain it. Let me explain my point, and then I'll answer your question. What I was getting at there was, the thing I had in mind when I made that slide was something like Facebook, where we just sit there and just for, I've done it myself, I understand. You can sit there and do this and read this stuff, and first thing you know, an hour has gone by, and I'm thinking, you know, I could have been working on Wednesday night sermon during this time, or I could have been doing something else. My point is we just simply need to be aware and be discerning on the matter of time and think about what we're doing and think about the time we're spending. Now, with regard to your question about is it a waste of time, oh my, you're almost asking the wrong guy. my immediate response is yes, it is. I realize, of course, we enjoy certain things, and there's nothing wrong with enjoying certain things as long as they're pure and right and godly. I don't know if that's a good answer or not, but...
Randy Tidmore and then Richard Bunner.
I guess I feel a lot like Clint was expressing. There have been times that we have done away with TVs from our house, and then later they come back. But what I really want to mention, two things. The importance of training our children, which is not just taking them to church, certainly that helps, but training them and in order to know how to handle the things, the pressures that they face. I call it giving them the tools, the basic tools, because we're not always going to be with them. And the other thing that I think maybe should be mentioned is the desensitizing nature of a lot of these things, and that's what a lot of these are doing. They're not, they don't think they're going to make gay people out of all of us. They know that's not going to happen, but to desensitize us to it, just like we were desensitized to smoking on TV, drinking on TV back, and then they took that off, and the things that Barney and them sometimes said some words that we didn't say at our house. And the reason that I'm concerned about this part of it is just hearing conversations about movies we ought to watch, and then questions coming up. There wasn't any nudity in that, was there? And it's like, you got to try to remember. And I remember being in a fellow preacher's home, and we were told this is a great comedy movie. And they, oh, I forgot. And she has to run, and the wife does, and spread her skirt out to cover the TV till that scene passes. And I don't. All I'm saying is we get desensitized, and we are playing into the hands of that, and we don't even realize it a lot of times how far we are from where we were.
Yeah, that desensitization is a very key factor in all of this, because the very things that our preachers in the 40s, 50s were telling us not to watch are the things we are now telling people they should watch, because that's the pure stuff. Now, I don't know, you know, we may have to watch hard to figure out what they were seeing back then, but, and maybe we may not have to watch that hard, I don't know, but that difference certainly demonstrates the desensitization that we've undergone over these decades.
Okay, our last question, Brother Richard Bunn.
Well, David, I enjoyed your talk. It made me uncomfortable, but I needed that. You know, some of the restorers and even some of those early Christian writers, they were opposed to entertainment entirely. And the restorers were opposed to reading novels, many of them. They would equate reading a novel the same as you were equating watching a television program, that it was a waste of time and it was about stuff that we don't need to be reading about. And, you know, I sort of wonder, you know, how far things go sometimes. Clearly on entertainment, bodily exercise profits little. That's a positive statement. It's not a negative statement. It's not wrong to go out and play ball or what have you. But the other type of stuff that influences our mind is, you know, where do we turn it off?
Well, that's a good point. Where do we turn it off? I guess I'm not sure. It is certainly a difficult matter, because, like I've mentioned, we're surrounded with it, we're constantly encouraged, and some of it's enjoyable, and some of it is not ungodly. It's just like one of the brothers mentioned, it's harder to find in that category. In answer to some of this and his closing remarks, and that's what I'm going to do here, I want to go back and just close out with what I started to say. There are psalms that teach us that God is our diversion. God is our refuge. And I know this sounds so simplistic, but one thing I've learned over a number of years, and maybe some of you have too, is the Word of God is the most entertaining reading you can do. Now, I know what we visualize. We visualize ourselves sitting in a chair reading the Bible silently, and we visualize ourselves drifting off to sleep. I know I have that trouble these days more than I used to. But if we sit as a family, I do this with my mother and my stepfather, who was recently baptized a few years ago. We sit and read the Bible audibly aloud together for a long time, not obligatory 5 minutes before bedtime. But the more we read and the more we digest it, the more it speaks to you. And it's some of the Old Testament is some of the most beautiful literature ever written. And we're missing it. And that was one of the things, one of the studies, one of these sources I read indicated that when parents, and this was denominational, but they were talking about the great fallout of their young kids, and they did a study, and I forget the percentage was very significant of the families that read and pray and talk with their children are the families who have the highest retention rate for their traditional morality. And I think that's what we ought to be encouraging ourselves to do. That's my thoughts.